Gulliver's Travels, Part 1, Chapter 7. The author, being informed of a design to accuse him of high treason, makes his escape to Blefuscu, his reception there. Before I proceed to give an account of my leaving this kingdom, it may be proper to inform the reader of a private intrigue which had been for 2 months forming against me. I had been hitherto all my life a stranger to courts, for which I was unqualified by the meanness of my condition. I had indeed heard and read enough of the dispositions of great princes and ministers, but never expected to have found such terrible effects of them, in so remote a country governed, as I thought, by very different maxims from those in Europe. When I was just preparing to pay my attendance on the Emperor of Blefuscu, a considerable person at court, to whom I had been very serviceable at a time while he lay under the highest displeasure of his Imperial Majesty, came to my house very privately at night in a close chair, and, without sending his name, desired admittance. The chairmen were dismissed. I put the chair with his lordship in it into my coat pocket, and giving orders to a trusty servant to say I was indisposed and gone to sleep, I fastened the door of my house, placed the chair on the table, according to my usual custom, and sat down by it. After the common salutations were over, observing his lordship's countenance full of concern, and inquiring to the reason, he desired I would hear him with patience in a matter that highly concerned my honour and my life. His speech was to the following effect, for I took notes of it as soon as he left me. "You are to know," said he, "that several committees of council have been lately called in the most private manner on your account, and it is but 2 days since His Majesty came to a full resolution. You are very sensible that Skyresh Bolgolam, Galbet, or High Admiral, has been your mortal enemy almost ever since your arrival. His original reasons I know not, but his hatred is increased since your great success against Blefuscu, by which his glory as admiral is much obscured. This lord, in conjunction with Flemnap, the high treasurer, whose enmity against you is notorious on account of his lady, Limtok, the general, Lalcon, the chamberlain, and Balmulf, the grand justiciary, have prepared articles of impeachment against you for treason and other capital crimes. This preface made me so impatient, being conscious of my own merits and innocence, that I was going to interrupt him when he entreated me to be silent and thus proceeded. Out of gratitude for the favours you have done me, I procured information of the whole proceedings, and a copy of the articles wherein I venture my head for your service. Articles of impeachment against Quinbis Flestrum, the Man-Mountain. Article 1. Whereas by a statute made in the reign of His Imperial Majesty Calendefer Plune, it is enacted that whoever shall make water within the precincts of the royal palace shall be liable to the pains and penalties of high treason, notwithstanding the said Quinbis Flestrin in open breach of said law, under colour of extinguishing the fire kindled in the apartment of His Majesty's most dear Imperial Consort, did maliciously, traitorously, and devilishly, by discharge of his urine, put out said fire kindled in the said apartment, lying and being within the precincts of said royal palace, against the statute in that case provided, etc., against the duty, etc. Article 2. That the said Quinbis Flestrin, having brought the imperial fleet of Blefuscu into royal port, and being afterwards commanded by His Imperial Majesty to seize all other ships of said empire by Blefuscu, and reduce that empire to a province to be governed by a viceroy from hence, and to destroy and put to death not only all the big Indian exiles, but likewise all the peoples of the empires who would not immediately forsake the big Indian heresy. He, the said Flestrin, like a false traitor against his most auspicious, serene, Imperial Majesty, did petition to be excused from said service upon pretense of unwillingness to force the consciences or destroy the liberties and lives of an innocent people. Article 3. That, whereas certain ambassadors arrived from the court of Blefuscu to sue for peace in His Majesty's court, he, the said Flestrin, did, like a false traitor, aid, abet, comfort, and divert the said ambassadors, although he knew them to be servants to a prince who was lately an open enemy to His Imperial Majesty, and in an open war against his said Majesty. Article 4. That the said Quinbis Flestrin, contrary to the duty of a faithful subject, is now preparing to make a voyage to the court and empire of Blefuscu, for which he has received only verbal license from His Imperial Majesty, and, under colour of said license, does falsely and traitorously intend to take the said voyage, and thereby to aid, comfort, and abet the Emperor of Blefuscu, so lately an enemy, and in an open war with His Imperial Majesty, aforesaid. There are some other articles, but these are the most important, of which I have read you an abstract. In several debates upon this impeachment, it must be confessed that His Majesty gave many marks of his great lenity, often urging the services you had done for him and endeavouring to extenuate your crimes. The treasurer and admiral insisted that you should be put to the most painful and ignominious death by setting fire to your house at night, and the general was to attend with 20,000 men armed with poison arrows to shoot you on the face and hands. Some of your servants were to have private orders to strew your poisonous juice on your shirts and sheets, which would soon make you tear your own flesh and die in the utmost torture. The general came into the same opinion, so that for a long time there was a majority against you, but His Majesty resolving, if possible, to spare your life, at last brought off the chamberlain. Upon this incident, Reldressel, principal secretary for private affairs, who always proved himself your true friend, was commanded by the emperor to deliver his opinion, which he accordingly did, and therein justified the good thoughts you have of him. He allowed your crimes to be great, but that there was still room for mercy, the most commendable virtue in a prince, and for which His Majesty was so justly celebrated. He said the friendship between you and him was so well known to the world that perhaps the most honorable board might think him partial. However, in obedience to the commands he had received, he would freely offer his sentiments, that if His Majesty, in consideration of your services, and pursuant to his own merciful disposition, would please spare your life, and only give orders to put out both your eyes. He humbly conceived that by this expedient justice he might have in some measure be satisfied, and all the world would applaud the lenity of the epitor, as well as the fair and generous proceedings of those who would have the honour to be his counsellors. That the loss of your eyes would be no impediment to your bodily strength, by which you might still be useful to His Majesty. That blindness is an addition to courage, by concealing dangers from us. That the fear you had for your eyes was the greatest difficulty in bringing over the enemy's fleet, and it would be sufficient for you to see by the eyes of the ministers, since the greatest princes do no more. This proposal was received with the utmost disapprobation. By the whole board, Bolgolam, the admiral, would not preserve his temper, but, rising up in fury, said he wondered how the secretary durst presume to give his opinion for preserving the life of a traitor, that the services you had performed were, by all true reasons of the state, the great aggravation of your crimes, that you, who were able to extinguish the fire by discharge of urine in Her Majesty's apartment, which he mentioned with horror, might at another time raise an inundation by the same means to drown the whole palace. And the same strength which enabled you to bring over the enemy's fleet might serve, upon the first discontent, to carry it back. That he had good reasons to think you were a big Indian in your heart, and as treason begins in the heart, before it ever appears in overt acts, so he accused you as a traitor on that account, and therefore insisted you should be put to death. The treasurer was of the same opinion. He showed to what straits His Majesty's revenue was reduced, by the charge of maintaining you, which would soon grow insupportable. That the secretary's expedient of putting out your eyes was so far from being a remedy against this evil that it would probably increase it, as is manifest from the common practice of blinding some kind of fowls, after which they fed the faster and grew fat sooner. That His Sacred Majesty and the Council, who are your judges, were, in their own consciences, fully convicted of your guilt, which was a sufficient argument to condemn you to death, without the formal proofs required by the strict letter of the law. But His Imperial Majesty, fully determined against capital punishment, was graciously pleased to say that since the council thought the loss of your eyes was too easily a censure, some other way may be inflicted hereafter. And your friend, the secretary, humbly desiring to be heard again, in answer to what the treasurer had objected, concerning the great charge His Majesty was in maintaining you, said that His Excellency, who had the sole disposal of the Emperor's revenue, might easily provide against that evil by gradually lessening your establishment, by which you want for sufficient you would grow weak and faint, and lose your appetite, and consequently decay and consume in a few months. Neither would the stench of your carcass be then so dangerous, when it would become more than half diminished, and immediately upon your death, 5 or 6 thousands of His Majesty's subject might, in 2 or 3 days, cut your flesh from your bones and take it away by cartloads, and bury it in distant parts to prevent infection, leaving the skeleton as a monument of admiration to posterity. Thus, by the great friendship of the secretary, the whole affair was compromised. It was strictly enjoined that the project of starving you by degrees should be kept a secret, but the sentence of putting out your eyes was entered on the books, none dissenting except Bolgolam, the admiral, who, being a creature of the empress, was perpetually instigated by Her Majesty to insist upon your death, she having borne perpetual malice against you on account of that infamous and illegal method you took to extinguish the fire in her apartment. In 3 days, your friend, the secretary, will be directed to come to your house and read before you the articles of impeachment, and then to signify the great lenity in favour of His Majesty and Council, whereby you are only condemned to the loss of your eyes, which His Majesty does not question you will gratefully and humbly submit to, and 20 of His Majesty's surgeons will attend in order to see the operation well performed by discharging very sharp-pointed arrows into the balls of your eyes as you lie on the ground. I leave to your prudence what measures you will take, and to avoid suspicion, I must immediately return in private as manner as I came. His lordship did so, and I remained alone, under many doubts and perplexities of mind. It was a custom introduced by this prince and his ministry, very different, as I have been assured, from the practice of former times, that after the court had decreed any cruel execution, either to gratify the monarch's resentment or the malice of a favourite, the emperor always made a speech to his whole council, expressing his great lenity and tenderness, as qualities known and confessed by all the world. His speech was immediately published throughout the kingdom, nor did anything terrify the people so much as those encomiums on his majesty's mercy, because it was observed that the more these praises were enlarged and insisted on, the more inhuman was the punishment, and the sufferer more innocent. Yet, as to myself, I must confess, having never been designed for a courtier, either by birth or education, I was so ill a judge of things that I could not discover the lenity in favour of this sentence. But I conceived it, perhaps erroneously, rather to be rigorous than gentle. I sometimes thought of it standing my trial, for although I could not deny the facts alleged in the several articles, yet I hoped they would admit some of extenuation. But having in my life pursued many state trials, which I never observed to terminate as the judges thought fit to direct, I durst not rely on so dangerous a decision, in so critical a juncture, and against such powerful enemies. Once I was strongly bent upon resistance, for while I had my liberty, the whole strength of that empire could hardly subdue me, and I might easily with stones pelt the metropolis to pieces. But I soon rejected that project with horror, by remembering the oath I had made to the emperor, the favours I received from him, and the high title of Nardac he conferred upon me. Neither had I soon learned the gratitude of courtiers to persuade myself that His Majesty's present 70s acquitted me of all past applications. At last I fixed upon a resolution, for which it was probable I may incur some censure, and not unjustly, for I confess I owe the persevering of mine eyes, and consequently my liberty, to my own great rashness and want of experience, because if I had known the nature of princes and ministers, which I have since observed in many other courts and their methods of treating criminals less obnoxious than myself, I should, with great alacrity and readiness, have submitted to so easy a punishment. But hurried on by the precipitancy of youth, and having His Imperial Majesty's license to pay my attendance upon the Emperor of Blefuscu, I took this opportunity, before the 3 days were elapsed, to send a letter to my friend the secretary, signifying my resolution of setting out that morning for Blefuscu, pursuant to the leave I had got. And, without waiting for an answer, I went to that side of the island where our fleet lay. I seized a large man of war, tied a cable to the prow, and, lifting up the anchors, stripped myself, put my clothes, together with my coverlet, which I carried under my arm, into the vessel, and drawing it after me between wading and swimming, I arrived at the royal port of Blefuscu, where the people had long expected me. They lent me 2 guides to direct me to the capital city, which is of the same name. I held them in my hands till I came within 200 yards of the gate, and desired them to signify my arrival to one of the secretaries and let him know I there awaited His Majesty's command. I had an answer in about an hour, that His Majesty's, attended by the royal family and great officers of the court, was coming out to receive me. I advanced 100 yards, the emperor and his train alighted from their horses, and empress and ladies from their coaches. I did not perceive that they were in any fright or concern. I lay on the ground to kiss His Majesty's and the empress's hands, and told His Majesty that I was come according to my promise, and with the license of the emperor my master, to have the honour of seeing so mighty a monarch, and to offer him any service in my power, consistent with my duty to my own prince, not mentioning a word of my disgrace, because I hitherto no regular information of it, and might suppose myself wholly ignorant of such a design. Neither could I reasonably conceive that the emperor would discover the secret, while I was out of his power, wherein, however, it was soon appeared I was deceived. I shall not trouble the reader with a particular account of my reception at this court, which was suitable to the generosity of so great a prince, nor of the difficulties I was in for want of a house and bed, being forced to lie on the ground wrapped up in my coverlet. End of chapter 7. Read by David Russell. For Lit2Go, available on the web at fcit.usf.edu.